You know her from ABC News, and you know that includes Good Morning America and daytime talker The View. Paula Faris is joining us on the line to talk about her new book, Called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. Hi, Paula.
Hi there, Jeremy. It's so great to be with you today.
Well, hello, my poutine buddy. I gotta say, you're a foodie.
Your poutine pal. that's so funny. I know that I'm talking to you from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I think I surprised you when I told you I've been to Winnipeg, Manitoba. I was there for the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, a couple years ago. And God bless Winnipeg, Manitoba. That's the first time I experienced poutine. If you don't know what poutine is, you should be ashamed of yourself. But I had never tasted poutine. It's French fries with gravy and cheese, correct?
Well, and now there's variations where you can get, you know, you can get chicken and bacon on it, or pierogies, and you know, it's almost like a pizza. It's become a pizza, essentially, is what it is.
But the original, like, unadulterated version of poutine is just fries and gravy, correct?
Fries, gravy, and cheese, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It is so good. So thank you, Winnipeg, Manitoba, for gifting that to me.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of those things that in isolation, I have to ask you then, are you eating more, eating less? Because I hear that people aren't necessarily working up an appetite, but then just eating because. What are you doing?
Comfort eating, oh, for sure. I had to go to the doctor for the first time today. Since quarantine, and of course they asked me to step on the scale. I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure, like, I've been walking here and there, and I've been exercising a little bit, but I was not expecting to see that number. I think there are two types of people in quarantine, those that enjoy working out and those that don't. And I definitely follow the latter category. I do not like to work out. I work out just so that I can eat my poutine. I work out that I can have buttered popcorn. So, yeah, whatever, though. We're all in it together. We're all going to have, probably some extra weight, some excess baggage, whether that's physical or literal, coming out of quarantine. So be it. It's been, so be it. We're more than this exterior.
Well, in addition to eating, though, I mean, this is a great time to put out a book, I would say, right? Everybody's wanting to consume more media and not necessarily food, right? It's the TV shows that people are streaming and books that they're reading. So I think the timing was good for you to put out a book right now.
Yeah, it was interesting at first when I realized that my book was going to be launched in the middle of a pandemic because the gestational period, the literary process is so long. I've been working on this book for 2 years. The manuscript was turned in, Jeremy, last June. So, you know, at first I was like, oh, the media tour, the book tour pretty much got canceled. So everything's happening virtually if it's happening at all. But listen, I hope that the book, the message, it's really been really humbling to see how it's meeting people where they are in this moment. I mean, it's about you are so much more than what you do and our misplaced significance and how when we misplace our significance and things that shift and shake. For me, it was my job. When I walked away from my dream job, I didn't know who I was anymore. But, you know, there's a lot of parallels between the book's message and really what people are going through right now where they've misplaced significance in either status or career or dwelling or finances. And that's all been upended in many regards. And what happens when that's your purpose and identity? And it's placed in those things. Well, you're rocked and you're uprooted. So the book's about, you know, A, knowing that your worth isn't in your work. You're more than what you do and what you place your identity in. But, you know, even peeling back those layers, you know, it helps equip people to really discover true purpose and true calling that don't shift and shake in personal crisis or a pandemic.
We see a lot of people open up about their truths and I'll put in quotation marks the real them. We see a lot of people doing that in writing more so than talking about it and having a conversation. Of course, people used to do those Barbara Walters sit-downs. But I assume when you write it, whether it's an emotional story or revealing something you've held as a secret, when you write it, it completely gives you the floor. Whoever is reading it can't interrupt you and give their two cents and tell you you're wrong or interrupt. It's a monologue. That's my take anyway. So tell me why you opened up about such personal details, though, from your life in a book.
Yeah, well, I mean, the personal details are, you know, I climbed the ladder of quote-unquote success and I leaned in and I pursued my quote-unquote calling because I bought that lie that that was my value, that my worth was work, my value was vocation. And at the top of my game, professionally, I was burned out. I was at a professional high, but a personal low. Professionally anchoring Good Morning America weekends and co-hosting The View, and personally looked around and my relationships were failing with my husband, my kids. My health started suffering, and the values that I held so dear were clashing with the choices that I was making. And so I sensed that I was being called out of this dangerous space where I was addicted to this thing that defined me. And when I felt that stirring that it was time to leave, felt that stirring that it was time to slow, panic and paralyzed by the fear, that's when I went through this personal crisis where I write about it, Jeremy, in the book. I call it my year of hell, where I had a miscarriage with an emergency surgery. I had a concussion at work, freak accident, knocked out of work for a couple of weeks. The day I was cleared to go back to work after that concussion, I was in a head-on car crash, then influenza, which turned into pneumonia. I was like, okay, even if you're a person of faith or not, I am. I was like, all right, I'm waving the white flag. It's time to slow down. Because if I'm not going to slow down, I felt like either God was getting me to slow down. So, but once I stepped away from those two dream jobs and stepped out of that space, that's where I write much of the book. I had no idea who I was without it. No clue. My identity, my purpose, my significance, it was all misplaced. It was placed in something that can shift and will shift, and that's your vocation. So that's where I really felt like I wanted to share this message with people, to kind of release them from the lie that their worth is work, to release them from the lie that their value is vocation, and to really encourage them in that you can find a purpose and calling that does shift and shake. And you are more than what you do. I didn't want to write a book just to write a book. I'd been approached for years to write a book. I never wanted to write one because I didn't have anything to say. But I felt like after going through what I went through, I really wanted to, that I had this message that I want to share with people to encourage and equip them.
And you use the term or the phrase called out. When we hear that, we assume it's confrontational and it's about conflict. Do you mean it to be something else?
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of a play on words. We're in call-out culture where we're calling people out. Some people have taken it as a sports reference. Hey, you're called out on strikes, in baseball. Mm-hmm. For me, I felt like I was called out of a dangerous space of addiction. And my narcotic of choice was success and my job. It was accolade. It was accomplishment. It was achievement. That was my go-to high. And so I felt like God called me out of that space, a really dangerous space where I became defined by what I did. I couldn't separate who I was from what I did. And now I can. So, but I had to be called out of it. And granted, I was kicking and screaming when I was walking away. I thought it was crazy. My colleagues thought it was crazy. Executives thought it was crazy. But I knew I had a peace in my spirit that it was the right thing to do. And I was still scared. So peace and fear can coexist when you're making those big decisions. I had a peace that I needed to do this, that I needed to slow down. But I was so scared. I was paralyzed by fear of what I was walking away from, these two dream jobs, and scared of what I was walking into, really the unknown. But so often we are, asked to go in a different direction. And the onus is on us whether or not we want to step into that fear and step out in faith. And that's what Martin Luther writes about so beautifully, is taking that first step. That's what faith is when you can't see the rest of the staircase. And you notice, you look back at the times in your life, Jeremy, and for your listeners, when you pushed into and pressed into your fear and stepped out in faith, that's where the good stuff is, really, truly. And even if on the other side, maybe some may say it's a failure, I've learned more from my failures than I have my successes, to be honest. I really, truly have. I just hope that the book really gives people tools to find out who they are outside of what they do and where they find significance.
It's interesting how life can do a complete 180, where you talk about dream jobs, but then it actually turns into, a nightmare. Not necessarily because of decisions you've made, but just because of circumstances and situations that just sort of happen, right?
Yeah. And I looked around in my landscape, and I was like, to try to the juxtaposition of a professional high but a personal low, and I thought, if I'm truly where I'm supposed to be, why isn't everybody getting my leftovers? Yet society was handing me accolades, and my church circle was like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing platform you have. Why would you ever give this up? But I said, I don't think that I was called vocationally to this space in order for everyone else to get my leftovers, right? I got it wrong, haven't I? And I don't think everybody, like, quote-unquote successful people need to step away. But I do think, you know, for me, I was in an unhealthy space. My work became my worth. And I didn't know who I was outside of it. And when the rubber met the road and I stepped away, even though I said my work never defined me, it had. It had become my drug of choice. And I had no clue who I was outside of it. It was a very dangerous place to be. And had I continued on that course, I would probably be divorced. I would have very little relationship with my children. My health would have continued to suffer. And, you know, at the end of it all, I would have been like, what did I just do? I couldn't see the forest from the trees. So I had to be extracted from that situation in many regards. That's why I feel like I was called out of it. And I think that's why I was that personal crisis, that season of hell. I do believe that crises are allowed to happen in your life sometimes to get your attention. For me, it got my attention. It forced me to slow down. In this moment that we're in, it's forcing so many of us to slow down, is it not? And tragedy and opportunity can coexist. Yes, I experienced a lot of tragedy and heartache in that season. You know, losing a child, you know, health issues, concussions, car crashes. Like, it was crazy, but tragedy and opportunity can coexist. And I believe that in this moment where we can lose on such a visceral, personal level, but we can also reassess. And if necessary, we can press a reset. How often do we get a reset button? We all have a reset right now. We really do.
Is there any point in the book, and again, we've already touched upon, you know, the stresses of your career, miscarriages, the car accidents and things like that. Was there anything that's most freeing that you got off your chest, maybe that people didn't know about you? And then I guess on the flip side of that, was there anything that you were maybe nervous or scared about people reading?
Oh, I was scared about people reading a lot of it, how I, like, tried to destroy my marriage, or, you know, early on in my career. You know, being vulnerable to the point where you're not oversharing. But I want people to learn from my flaws and my failures. It's not just my personal story either. It's not straight memoir, Jeremy. I do conduct a lot of interviews because I'm a reporter. That's my nature. Of other people who've misplaced their significance and how we've found it, how we found purpose and calling that don't shift and shake. And what I'm most proud of is just releasing people from this lie that their worth is their work, that their value is vocation, their calling is career, because we are so much more than what we do. And that's what I really think, that's what we dig into. We really unpack those words that are thrown around a lot, purpose and calling. And those words are always baked into career. They're always baked into doing. So this book really just gives people the tools to figure out who they are outside of what they do, to know, to develop a purpose statement, to know who they are to the point where they don't shift and shake. Their purpose no longer shifts and shakes in a pandemic. It no longer shifts and shakes. It's not movable. It's unrootable in a pandemic. And that's what I'm really, that's what I really want to equip people with. I feel like it is my personal message to just, you know, to destroy these lies from society that your value is vocation. You know, the lies that we hear, what's your name, what do you do for a living, as if that's our only contribution. To really start asking our children different questions instead of what do you want to be and what do you want to do when you grow up. I want to ask them, who do you want to be? Because we have so much more to give. And if the emphasis is only on doing, then guess what? We are bound for an identity crisis. We have everything wrong if that's our only contribution to society than doing, if that's our only measure of success.
We have about a minute left, and I would get fired if I didn't ask you about The View. I mean, right now, it's not really in the headlines because everybody's separated, right? Everybody's in their own corners. But what do you make of how much the infighting and backstage drama makes headlines and has people talking?
That's the MO of The View. that's what people have come to know and expect, and what a lot of people like about the show.
So do you think the media blows out of proportion? Is it justified because the... What's your take?
Listen, I think that the show demands, and viewers, they demand and expect really opinionated, strong women, strong co-hosts that give their strong opinion. And yes, I mean, they tune in to watch women yelling at one another, to watch women digging their heels in, to see confrontation, verbal confrontation. That's why it is called The View. And the viewers and the show expect and deserve strong views, do they not? And of course that can lead to confrontation on air, but backstage, if people get along, it's like a family, if you think about it, Jeremy. Families fight, do they not?
Mm-hmm.
But families you move on. Like, you reconcile and you move on, and that's what it's like. It's this big sorority, this family, where we can articulate our differences, and then we walk backstage and we're like, hey, I really like that dress you're wearing today. Who made it? You know? Hey, can I come in your dressing room after the show for lunch and hang out for a little bit? It's like you move on, but people try to make a mountain out of a molehill. And of course there are things that we vehemently disagree about. I don't see eye to eye with Joy and Whoopi on a lot of things, but I love them. Joy is one of my closest friends, Joy Behar is. We don't have anything in common, but I love and respect her because she's a human being, because she's made in the image of God. That's all I need to know. But yeah, the show just has an MO. I mean, if you work on that show, you should anticipate articles written that will try to assassinate your character and inaccuracies. And that's just part of the job. That's part of the gig. I had to get used to that. It was tough, honestly. But it's just part of the gig. It really is.
Yeah, Joy is funny. I don't know how many times she's crashed our radio shows, Paula, but she does make an appearance, doesn't she?
All right. Great. I love Joy.
The book is called Out, Why I Traded Two Dream Jobs for a Life of True Calling. It's on Amazon and I guess all the other online bookstores, which is the safest place to get it these days, right?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Target.com, Walmart.com. I really appreciate you guys supporting the book. And I know that it's been so overwhelming and humbling for me to hear men and women who reached out to me, and they have their own take, and they're like, "This, I feel like you wrote this book about me." And that's why this isn't my book. I feel like this is your book. This is the people's book. This is a movement where I just want to release people from that lie of believing that their only value and worth is work, and their only value is in doing. And so I really hope it blesses people and encourages them and equips them.
And I'm proud that you've discovered the power of poutine. Paula Ferris, thank you so much for joining us.
The power of poutine. Amen.
That's going to be our new web series, okay? We'll launch that in the fall.
Yes, it's awesome. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Paula. Awesome. Great chatting with you.